listening to the Hometown Losers, the St. Louis Sports Podcast, with Josh, Adam, and OJ.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back here to the Hometown Losers Podcast in session number 22, the Big 2-2. I'm joined, as always, here by my co-host, Adam and OJ. Gentlemen, how are we doing on this NFL draft day?
I'm doing great.
Doing great here as well. Glad to be back.
Learn new things all the time.
Obviously, we have a lot, some new topics to talk about, or some old, some new. So looking forward to, as always, to another wonderful week here on the Hometown Losers.
For sure. I got to give a real quick special shout out to my my sister, who is a big Jacksonville Jaguar fan and continues to give me trouble about Kermit the Frog. That is Patrick Mahomes. So I gave her a little bit of rubbing today. All I have to say is good luck out there with the Jacksonville Jaguars. I know it was bad interpretation.
I was going to say, I've heard you do the Kermit voice so much better before. Well, now you're on the spot, though.
So yeah, exactly. That's where it was.
You're on the clock. You're on the clock now. Can't do it. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. But hey, when I wanted to like say written down, I probably would have been better about it. You know what I mean? But yeah. So anyways, let's get to some STL topics here. Let's talk about the Cardinals, guys, man. Ooh. Like they picked up a massive win today. And we say massive, but really it's just because they were about to get swept in a 4-game series to the Giants. I'm telling you, this team is just still losing, right? So they're 10-16 after today. They're last in NL. They're 8 games behind the Pirates. They have, and this is, I wanted to see, like, really, are we just that bad? Like, what's going on, right? So out of the series that we have played, we have won 2 of the series. So we won the one against the Blue Jays, and we did beat the Rockies, right? We've split one. So we had that 4-game series, and I'm trying to remember, it was against the Pirates. We split the series against the Pirates, 2 games and 2 games.
Which is shocking, considering they're, like, the best team in, you know, the National League, so.
Right. We've lost 5 series and we got swept once. So 2-5-1, if you want to count a tie into that. Actually, no, it's 6 because we got swept. So like 2-6-1, if you want to talk about that, is not really good going into this series. So I know that we've talked about this every single week. But it's starting to like feel real late already, very early. You know, Adam, I know you and I are a little bit more of a like emotional, like in the moment type of fan. And OJ, I know that you're more of like, you know, things are more like analytical and you have like that belief to it. So I'll start with you, you know, OJ. I mean, is that faith in the fact that we can come back wavered at all? Is it starting to get more doubtful? Or are you still feeling that we have a team that can win the Central?
Well, yeah, no, it's definitely starting to get doubtful just because of the way they play. Like, right. I don't know. It doesn't seem like, well, I mean, today they kind of seem to maybe the worm's starting to turn a little bit. I don't know. But, you know, the team seemed demoralized. And when they stop believing, then, you know, they're not going to ever come back. So,
yeah, exactly.
You know, we had this similar thing kind of happen with the Blues season this year where they started off not so good. And it's like, well, they're way better than this on paper. Like, they've got to get better. And they just kind of never did. So, you know, it could be one of those situations, I suppose.
And I think that's a very good correlation, right? You know, because, again, the Blues were supposed to be a very touted team, the one that could maybe not necessarily – like, there was one expert that had us winning the Cup this year. But most of them had us – you know, in the semifinals for the West or in the finals for the West, making a deep run. And obviously, as you said, that just never came to fruition, right? So it's going to be very interesting for sure to see if the Cardinals can turn it around. They look much better today. I watched most of the game. Michaelis looked like Michaelis for the first time this season, but it's already like, we're behind the eight ball. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Adam, what's your thoughts so far?
Yeah, I mean, and the same thing goes to like Goldie as well, because he's been really in a slump as well. And he finally like kind of showed up today, you know. And that's the thing that also kind of bothers me, is that while we tout our offense, and obviously we have, you know, we kind of beat down on our pitchers, the problem is, though, is that we're not scoring runs when we have, you know, men on base. That's the problem, is that we're not scoring enough. We're leaving them stranded half the time. So they're not getting the job done either. And I think part of that is to do with the lineup. And I'm going to blame, you know, Ollie for a little bit of that as well. You know, I think I know a lot of people are harsh on him right now for everything. While I don't think everything is his fault, but I think there's some game day decisions that he's making that are contributing to this for sure. And I think that's part of the problem, is lineup issues. We're also having issues with the fact that, you know, we can't get pitching start, you know, decent pitching either, for that matter. And then obviously, you know, we're having some issues out in the outfield as well. So, you know, there's a lot of factors for this. I do have an interesting stat, though, you know, if we want to remain hopeful or not. There's only been four times that I'm aware of where a team in the first 25 games only won like 10 or less games and actually went on and actually went into the playoffs. So the likelihood right now is pretty slim. We've had a pretty rough start, and unless things really change, and they change very quickly, you know, we're going to get way behind the eight ball at that point. You know, there's no real easy answer right now, but because technically, you know, looking at it on paper, we should be a better team than we are, but there's multiple, in my opinion, if you dissect it, there's a lot of problems. There's a lot of holes here that we need to patch up for sure.
And so I want to like address that Marmol stuff, right, Adam, that you just brought up, that you, as you said, it's not on him, but some of the decisions he's made, you know, it's kind of been questionable. OJ, I'll go to you with this here before I come back to you, Adam, on it. I mean, do you believe that, you know, like he has made, Marmol's made quite a few mistakes? I'm thinking in my head, right? I'm thinking definitely Jordan Hicks. I mean, he's stuck with Jordan Hicks for such a long time, really, really struggling. And do you think also like some of that is just from the inexperience? Because this is only his, I mean, he's young. He's never really
coached before. He's very young, before, yeah.
Yeah. Second year coaching, right? So, OJ, yep. I mean, do you kind of share the same thoughts that Adam does, that, you know, maybe some of these, the reason why we've lost is just Marmol's management issues?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you can contribute entire losses to him, but he definitely makes some mistakes. You know, like, I don't get pinch hitting for Gorman. Like, I mean, he stopped doing that, which is a good sign that he'll change his ways sometimes. But I mean, at the beginning of the year, he was pinch hitting for Gorman whenever he'd have a lefty pitcher late in the game. Gorman's like our hottest hitter. Like, if you got a dude, like, you don't pinch hit for Albert Pujols or something just because he's got a split, right? So
yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
I thought that was dumb use of analytics, but they have kind of knocked that off, so that's good.
Yeah,
you know, he stuck with Jordan Hicks too long when he was really struggling. He continued putting him in games, but also they did eventually take him out of those situations, and now he's actually pitching well. Like, the last several starts he's had, he's pitched very well, and he looked really good today too. So, I mean, he could, you know, be in line to move back up potentially into some more higher leverage situations. But yeah, so it's kind of a small error, right? Because you do have to walk a line between, you know, yanking somebody, like every time somebody makes a mistake or blows an inning or something, where you demote them and then they get tight cheeks and they're never, no one on the team's any good, right? You can't do that. So you got to give guys some wiggle room to mess up. And he kind of went over the line, I think, in this case. But it's not like an unforgivable mistake or something, you know?
Well, speaking of yanking people out or whatnot, what are your thoughts on the Walker situation being demoted?
Yeah.
I'm still kind of the opinion that he maybe shouldn't have started the year on the team, especially seeing his defense. Like, they saw that in spring, and they said, he'll probably, you know, he can maybe make up for that, you know, or we can cover that with our, well, no, not with the way things are going. I mean, we're having enough trouble preventing runs as it is. We don't need a guy that hardly knows the position out there right now. So not only do they want him to work on his swing, to me, the the bigger deal is his fielding, because he has the contact skill. He's got the power. It's not like he hits everything into the ground like his whole career. Like, he eventually would come out of this where he's hitting into a lot of ground ball outs. Mm-hmm. He'd eventually make an adjustment and come out of that anyway. It's just the outfield play is just unbearable right now.
I get it.
Figure it out.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because I'm actually going to continue on that topic that Adam just brought up about Walker. But OJ, I want to get back to your point, because you talked about Jordan Hicks. He's been pitching better, right? Are you referring to like in AAA or AA or something like that? Because he didn't pitch today, so I was just confused on what you meant by that.
Jordan Hicks pitched today.
He definitely did not pitch.
It was yesterday. Yeah. Maybe it was yesterday I'm thinking of. Sorry.
Okay. No, you're fine. Yeah, so I was just confused too. But yeah. So again, it's those high leverage situations, right, where you just had all that pressure on him. And, you know, obviously we're going to have to build him back up. But anyways, getting to, you know, the Walker. So to me, I thought this like one side of this made sense, right? Yeah, as OJ, we talked about this at the beginning of the season that, you know, Walker may or may not make the lineup. But he needs work in the outfield, right? And we've pretty much said it every single week. Mm-hmm. But the confusing thing to me is, why the hell did you sign Tyler Motler to a major league deal?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the next infielder that they have that they want to bring up is Mason Winn, and they want him to play every day. And they don't want to bring up another outfielder, quote unquote, in Juan Yepes. Because I think part of the reason they're trying to like get rid of some of the log jam on the major league roster, so you don't want to bring up an outfielder, so you bring up Motter because he's like 33 and you don't care what happens to him. Like, he can come up, sit on the bench the entire time. If you never need him, no sweat off anyone's backs, right? So
that's gotcha. Okay, so that makes way more sense, right? Because obviously he's not performed very well this season so far, so that's why I was very confused on why they would do that. So like, okay, again, the Jordan Walker thing totally makes sense, but now that you move Walker down, you option him down, and then you sign Motler to a major league deal, which was like, okay, that it just didn't make any sense. But that does open it up quite a bit more for the understanding side of things.
Yeah, because looking at our outfield, obviously we'll have some rotation, you know, with Newt, with Broneal and Dylan Carlson and Burleson. I'm sure, you know, they'll have some format that they'll, you know, rest some of those guys on and off, you know, based upon that, I would assume.
Yes.
So
absolutely.
We'll see how it goes, you know,
for those guys to showcase what they're capable of as well.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously, just back to just real quick about Walker, I think another point as well that we've been seeing, because obviously Walker had, you know, he was going with his hit streak and all this. This was great. But the problem is that we've been seeing as of late as well is that he's, you know, he's swinging and missing at a lot of pitches as well. You know, there's a lot of strikeouts in that sense recently. So I'm just making that point as well. So while that was carrying him for a while, he's starting to, you know, swinging at pitches that he shouldn't be swinging at. Just wanted to make that point as well. That's probably one of the other contributing factors. Not only is he struggling out there, but also at the plate.
And that's he like basically didn't take walks. Like, I think his approach was not very mature either. Mm-hmm. You know, whether he's a mature person or not, his plate approach, he didn't show nearly enough patience. That kind of goes for our whole roster though, too. That's part of what's killing our offense recently, I think. Mm-hmm. Really, I kind of noticed a change last night, late in the game. All of a sudden they start taking walks. They just leave the bat on their shoulder because they know they finally are figuring out, hopefully, that when they have a 3-2 count with runners on, the pitcher's gonna throw them something out of the zone and get them to chase, because that's
absolutely
all. Every team does that to every one of our hitters. It's like they get us
the same. And they know it. That's the thing. And they know that we're gonna chase it. So it's like, of course they would. Why wouldn't they? It's so damn predictable.
You get on base. Now all of a sudden, even though you're down 7-3, you got bases loaded in the bottom of the ninth. You at least have a chance. Right. Yeah. And that carried into today, where they had a bunch of base runners today. They drew a lot of walks. I think they loaded the bases in the third inning. They didn't score off of Porsche, but they did
love. Yeah, well, and that's the problem too, is the fact is that we, you know, we're leaving so many guys, you know, so many been stranded as well. Dude, we've been that's been that's been our whole season so far.
When Gorman struck out on that one, but it was like just a perfectly placed pitch on the full count. It was just like perfectly on the black. Mm-hmm. So he had to swing at it, but it was in a really tough place to even get wood on it. So he struck out swinging. But it wasn't like he got fooled. Like he had to swing at it. So it was just a great pitch, that one. So.
Sure. And that's understandable.
Yeah.
Yep, and to that point, the Cardinals just have not been doing well in the risk, right? I mean, runners in scoring position is what I'm referring to. I mean, I think we're batting like sub 200 or something like that with runners in scoring position, which really hurts your offensive production. And again, it puts more pressure on Goldschmidt, on Arenado. They feel that they had a home run every time just to, you know, get some offensive production. And then all that slides down to now the pitching staff, right? Mm-hmm. The starting pitchers feel that they got to go deeper. They feel like they have to be absolutely perfect because if, you know, they get two base hits in a row, all of a sudden now, great. If I give up this one run, our offense can't manage it. And then again, it goes down to also the late inning relievers and stuff like that. Like what we're talking about, Jordan Hickson, every single situation is a high leverage situation. So, I think that.
I was going to add also, especially with the pitch clock. I mean, having short innings where you get out, where you let the other pitcher get out of the inning really quickly is super detrimental to your team because it hurts your starter and it helps theirs going forward in the game. So, I mean, sometimes you need to take a lot of pitches just to give your starter a chance to rest on the bench. Like,
I mean, and that's why you take that first pitch most of the time, you know what I mean? Even though it's right down the middle.
Yeah, so like being hyper aggressive, you know, it's really not good a lot of the time anyway, unless you got a reason to be.
Well, yeah, for sure. Unless you know something that, you know, okay, he always throws or he typically throws a fastball in the zone in this specific spot every single time on the first throw, right, to get ahead in the count. Then, you know, maybe you want to do that like in the middle inning, start ripping it a little bit, you know,
right,
make him think about it more.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
But I did read as well about that, Adam, that you brought that up, that, you know, it wasn't just the offensive play that they're looking at with Walker. It was more for the fact that, you know, they want him to have better play discipline, better pitch selection is the way they said for it.
Definitely, because he's swinging at all kinds of shit at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he really, and I think that, again, some of that is him feeling that he's really got to like earn the spot and he's got to be able to show that he can do it on a consistent basis, which.
Well, sure. I mean, and that's the thing is that, you know, I think that, you know, that run that he had, you know, while it was great, I think that also kind of gave him this impression that he had to keep doing it. And so now he's you're just swinging at everything, you know, I mean, that's just my opinion. Is that he's got, like you said, he has to kind of prove himself, you know, because like, oh, hey, I got my opportunity. I got, you know, I'm in the big leagues now. So I got to go out there and just, you know, produce. Well, he should. But at the same problem is that he's not disciplined enough to just not swing at shitty pitches, too. So it's like that's part of being in the big leagues, like you said.
Yeah. And I don't think the Cardinals did him any favors either. Because
By rushing up, like
senior of the franchise.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, you're definitely right.
People are giving him standing ovations when he comes to play. It's like he's a rookie.
He's got a lot of pressure on him, right? So
people are acting like he's Yachty or some shit. It's the craziest. So yeah, he definitely is up there like, man, I gotta hit some.
I gotta produce. Yeah. It's like rest on me, dude. And
definitely could make a 20-year-old press.
For sure.
Yeah. Amen to that. I mean, and I think that a lot of it comes down to just experience and maturity. Because again, I think we keep losing the fact that he never, because he did look at, for the start of the year, he did look pretty decent, right? His numbers in the full scale thing, yes, he had the 12 game hitting streak, right? But you know, and I think out of the 19 games he played in, he got 16 or he got hits in 16 of them. That looks good, but most of the time it was one and done hits, right? He only had two hits, I think, in three out of those 19 games, which, again, in the small scope that we have is not terrible, but it's also combined with the fact that a lot of the hits were bloop singles, not hard contact. you know, stuff like that, that kind of equates to it. And I feel that, you know, he's going to have more and more pressure. What you really don't want him developing, especially at this stage, because he does have so much potential, is developing bad habits. Because, oh, I've been in the MLB. I know how to hit in the MLB. This is how I do it. But that's really not how you do it. You just learn the wrong way how to do it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, you just start, your approach is completely different. I'm too aggressive. Or, you know, like, oh, this is definitely a curveball when it's actually a slider, or, you know, stuff like that. So I think that giving them that AAA experience where you have a lot of veteran presence, that are older guys that have been to the show, or really high end level guys that are about to burst through as well, I think that's going to really help not just his defensive side of things, because I think that's just reps, right? I mean, he's coming from third base and we tend to forget about that too. But I think it's definitely the approach at the plate. You know, do you guys agree with me, or am I kind of on an island on that aspect?
No, I think you definitely are on it for sure. That, you know, you, it makes sense.
Yeah, 100% makes sense.
So, I mean, we'll see how that, you know, continues to go forward. And the thing is, you know, from the conversations that have been kind of heard around the clubhouse and stuff like that, it doesn't sound like this is like, okay, Walker is going to be down in AAA for the rest of the season. He may eventually come back up. I just don't know when they would want
it. Yeah, but I was going to say, it just depends on, you know, how things go, I guess, you know, how, if they can work those things out, you know, and kind of get him to be a little more disciplined and, you know, at the bat, and then obviously work on his, you know, his fielding a little bit. But he definitely needs a little bit of work. I'm not saying that, you know, it's going to take a lot, but I think he just needs a little more, you know, a little more experience and focus on those things and, you know, tune him up. So I think we could see him, you know, later on in the season, but, you know, later in the season, maybe, you know, this late this fall, potentially. We'll see. I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, I also think we'll see him back up yet.
I mean, we'll have to see, you know, obviously how everything goes. So
for sure. It's, I mean, it's obviously at this point, all we can do is speculate. So, you know.
Yeah. I am going to want to get some opinions from you guys here. So I have in front of me five possible trades that have been talked about here in the past couple of weeks. I'm going to run these by you guys and kind of see what your thought process is on around them. You know, do you think these are good trades? Do you think they're bad trades? So on and so forth. Right. And and kind of go from there. So I'll start with the first trade. So this is Dylan Cease, who is the right-handed pitcher from the White Sox. So far this season, he's 2-0 in six starts. He's got 15 walks, 37 strikeouts, and a whip of 1.38. So pretty impressive there. The proposed trade is Dylan Carlson, Grisafeo, so Gordon Grisafeo from, I think Grisafeo is in our AAA system now. I could be wrong. It might be in the double. Juan Yepes, and then Cooper Herpy. Sure. I literally think that's how you say his name, because it's H-J-E-R-P-E. I've never heard the guy. So we'll start here. We're just kind of do this in a round robin thing. You know, sure. OJ, what's your thoughts? Like, so if this is a trade that's presented to you, is this something that you would be willing to take, or is this just too much given up right now?
Well, I'd have to see more of Cece's numbers this year. But my initial reaction is that Cooper Herpy is a little far. He's like kind of one of the one of our top pitching prospects, whereas Grisafeo, he's probably more of like tops out as like a mid rotation arm. So I mean, I might want to try and replace Herpy if I can.
Right.
Who would you give him up with? You know,
is there somebody else you have in mind?
I mean, obviously we want to keep Mason Winn, I would think. So
I mean, Grisafeo's already a decent pitching prospect, and then you're getting Juan Yepes, and what was the other one, Josh?
It was Juan Yepes, Dylan Carlson, Herpy, and Grisafeo.
Dylan Carlson adds a lot of value too, because he can play center field, and he has that. I mean, I'd honestly just Herpy off of it and be like, yeah, there you go. Because I mean, you're trading an everyday player too. That's the other thing, you know, like as good as CC is, he only affects your team one day out of five. So.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's a very good point too. I mean, like, obviously we know this club needs starting pitching, but to what avail, you know what I mean? Like really, like what are you willing to give up in order for you to like be able to make a make an impact at a starting position. I mean, listen, last year we had to do the same thing. We had to give up a everyday center fielder in Harrison Bader for Jim Montgomery, right? That had to happen, and obviously we felt that we had the outfielders to be able to put in there. We know that eventually Walker's going to be coming up. We know we have other outfielders, and right now we do have kind of a surplus to that. But to your point, OJ, I mean, that's an everyday. It's not like a rotational platoon guy that can get in there with certain teams, but he's kind of like our fourth outfielder, right? He's definitely, I would say, in our top three right now. And there's a reason why you didn't want to give him, you know, for Juan Soto. You know what I mean?
Oh, exactly.
You feel comfortable in that. So that's an interesting, you know, point to have for sure.
That's what I'm getting at, because like not only is he at least a serviceable center fielder that has always hit for at least like average, I think he's been around average hitting wise in totality so far in his career, but he's still only 23. So he has a ceiling of like an above average hitting good defensive center fielder. Like that's hard to find. So to me, Dylan Carlson has a lot of value. And so I'd take Herpy off of it. And then I think I would do that trade. Although honestly, I kind of hesitate with Carlson a little bit, but I think we got a lot of crowded outfield. So I guess we'd trade, you know, a surplus.
Yeah, it's going to cost some money. I mean, that's just, you know, in essence, it's going to cost us some value or whatever to give up when you're getting somebody like, you know, like Dylan Cease. You know, he's I'm looking at his stats here, and he went 14-8, 220 ERA, 227 strikeouts, and 184 innings pitched. Once he was finished second to Cy Young voting, it's gonna cost, you know, us some assets for sure. So, yeah. And if we want to be serious about actually making some changes, you know, to our rotation, so.
Yeah, he would be a definite ace that we've been needing.
For sure, we need it. Yeah, I think that we should definitely consider it. You know, if it's possible. I mean, obviously he's not a free agent, it looks like, for a few years. So it's going to take a little bit of work to make that actually happen. And obviously the other thing is too, most likely when those kind of big transactions don't really occur until at least like what, July, around the All-Star break or whatever. So, you know, I don't see anything happening anytime soon.
Yeah.
So but we'll see.
Yeah. And that was the other thing about it too, why I think that some of that was so expensive, so to speak, and how many players or like pitch or people were involved for that trade specifically, because Cease is, I think, in a really team friendly deal for like 3 or 4 years, right? So yeah. I think that's part of that, you know, what goes into that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So
for sure.
Yeah. Carl, right, let's take a look. Have a lot of control left too. I mean, Carlson's still under control for a while too, because he's so young. So.
Mm-hmm. And you still got all arbitration and stuff like that as well.
Yeah. So.
Well, let's take a look at the second trade here. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be in the same vein, because obviously we know we need pitching here. So we trade straight up Tyler O'Neill for Tyler Glasnow from the Rays. So Tyler it's an interesting one. So he only had 6 starts last year, was 2-0. Mm-hmm. He hasn't made a start this year because he's coming off of injury. He does have a career WAR of 5.1 and an ERA of 4. So, and I think that's the reason why it's a straight trade for one outfielder for a pitcher, very similar to the Jim Montgomery and Harrison Bader trade from last year. And I'm going to start with you. Does this sound like a trade that you would be willing to entertain, or is it not enough, too much? What's your thoughts?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, we need, you know, a solid rotation. And obviously this has been teased already about, you know, O'Neill and, you know, some riffs that he's had with Ollie. So it wouldn't surprise me, honestly. I mean, since the rumors have already been swirling, if something like this actually could come down, you know, the question is, though, is Glasnow's injury history, you know, which that is concerning. Obviously he's like, we're going to give up, you know, we're giving up somebody that's, you know, a solid, you know, he's been, you know, pretty solid for us, you know, O'Neill overall. Are we going to be acquiring somebody that has had, you know, that's going to have issues potentially long-term? So that's just one thing I would consider in this. I mean, if going through, you know, if you get a full health inspection on him per se, and he looks like the prognosis is that he's going to come back and he should, you know, it looks like he'll be fine. I think it, you know, it would make sense, I think, because we need a true ace for us, you know, for our rotation. So.
That's an interesting perspective too, because I do think for me personally, it comes down a lot around injury too. Like how close is he to being ready too?
Cause yeah.
Like you can't make that trade if he's not ready. You know what I mean?
Sure. And we need pitching now. Right. That's the thing. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not like something we're waiting on, you know, it's like, it's a nice to have thing. It's like, okay, if we make this happen, how quickly can he be in, you know, in and how effective is he going to be? So I think it really comes down to that. If he can come in and he's solid, you know, and, you know, he's pitching like he was, you know, in the, you know, recent couple of past few years or whatever, then I'd say let's make the deal happen. It makes sense.
And so, OJ, what's your thoughts? I mean, do you kind of agree with us to maybe make this make sense? Or is there something that you kind of see that says, no, I'd much rather not make this trade?
So I'm a little leery of Glass now, not just for his injury history, but like from his own words, like I heard a podcast where he was talking about how the Rays do stuff. And I guess what they do is they find these guys that have really unique pitch profiles and they tell them just throw that pitch and throw it down the middle. So to me, that's kind of like because it moves so weird and stuff like that, you know, or there's something weird about it that makes it hard to hit. I always worry with something like that, though, that if teams see it enough that they adapt to it eventually and then you'll still get hit anyway. You know what I mean? Especially if
right, that's no, for sure.
And butter. But so I do worry that he may not be as good for us as he's been with Tampa Bay, because I also don't necessarily trust our pitching development and coaching right now as much as I trust Tampa's. So he's like since he's like a non-standard, I guess you'd say, kind of pitcher, I don't know how well we'd handle it. So he would not be my first choice of guys to go after. So, I mean, honestly, I'd rather try and deal with Miami if I could, because they need outfielders bad. And I think their payroll is still pretty low, too. So if O'Neill went off, they could sign him as like a
long-term deal. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, he would definitely, they'd have room for him. I mean, so yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, you're fine. And it's interesting, too, because I thought the exact same thing. I feel like we've been really talked about with specifically with Miami, right, on having some of these conversations for a trading partner, because obviously they really need help in the outfield and they have a surplus of pitching right now. But none of the trades that were proposed were with Miami at all, crazily enough. So kind of interesting to have that.
I guess they are. Pablo Lopez, so maybe people think they won't trade any more pitchers. I don't know.
Yeah, they're not in the market. Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? Again, like some of these things could happen, some of these could not. Who knows, right?
Right.
Come down to it. Let's take a look at the third one here. This one actually was kind of interesting to me. So the proposed trade was another straight up trade. It's the it's Dustin May from the Dodgers, right-handed pitcher who's 2-for-1, 2-in-1, excuse me. In five starts, ERA of 3.07, 10 walks, 19 strikeouts, but a whip of 0.92 so far this season. Straight up trade for Tommy Edman because they're looking to replace their shortstop. OJ, what's your thoughts on this? I mean, do you think this would be a good trade, or do you think that maybe Dustin May is not the answer there?
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's a hell no for that trade. Look, I mean, has he been a reliever? I'm looking at his innings pitched. He's only like pitching 23, 30, 29 innings in over entire seasons. Like,
he's definitely dealt with some injury issues. Now, when he was like starting and was doing very well, like his stuff was almost unhittable. He's that ginger that they have, right? I mean, he is.
He's a good pitcher. Don't get me wrong, but I mean. Edman is also a very valuable player, even if
he's a gold glover, you know, that seems like a lot to give up.
I mean, let's do this just by war here. If I can get Fangraphs to load, because I think it's not even going to be, well, it's definitely not even going to be close. So last year, Tommy Edman gave you 5.7 war. That's like MVP caliber stuff. Uh-huh. That's between his base run, defense, offense, positional adjustments, all that. Dustin May gave you less than that his entire career so far because he hasn't been able to pitch enough.
Yeah.
I mean, what is this? 2.9 WAR is what his career WAR is. So, and also, I mean, his numbers even don't look nearly as good as like Glasnow's, for instance. To me, Dustin May is a kind of guy that might be primed to blow up once he sees more exposure around the league. So, I would not trade Tommy Edman for him straight up at all. The Dodgers would need to add to that quite a bit, honestly.
Yeah. I would agree with that because that's kind of the thing that looked at me. I'm like, really? For Edman, you want to get a pitcher. Okay, I understand that. But to me, and I get it, you're not going to like trade him straight up for, you're not going to trade him for like, bona fide ace. You know, Tommy Edman's not going to be able to go out there and get you Verlander. You know what I mean? Or trying to remember who, DeGrom. That's the name that was stuck in my, yeah. The time I'm talking there. You know, you're not going to be able to make that kind of move. I understand that, but I definitely think he's worth way more than Dustin May. You know what I mean?
100%. Yeah.
Tommy is incredibly underrated, actually. Like, people around the league do not know his name at all, but he's so valuable.
I love Tommy Edman, man. Sure. Like, and that was the thing about it is, like, I was okay with him as their shortstop and then having Brendan Donovan as their second baseman because I love both of those guys. You know what I mean? But I get it that, you know, you want to move Tommy back to second and give DeJong some chance at shortstop and stuff like that and allow Donovan to be more that rotational guy, that utility guy. I totally understand that. But, you know, it is what it is. But, yeah, I love Tommy Edman.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I do think Tommy Edman's a better defensive player at second. Like, he's a gold glover there. I don't know if he's gold glove at shortstop. The gold glove he won was, I guess that's his split time second that year. Sure. But to me, I don't know. Like, I could be wrong. But honestly, like, I kind of wouldn't mind seeing Mason Winn at shortstop and Tommy Edman at second. That's kind of what I'm thinking about ultimately. That's kind of why I want to see him at second. Because,
because it's not just about this year. You know, it's exactly. You're thinking 2, 3, 4 years down the road. Exactly right.
Yeah, exactly. Because that would be a hell of a middle infield. So.
Especially that rocket arm with Mason Winn. Let's take a look here at the, you know what? I'm just going to skip this one because this is Aaron. It's Aaron Nola from the Phillies for McCreevy and Dylan Carlson. And I don't think this is a good trade anyways, to be quite honest with you. First and foremost, I don't think that. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Adam.
Yeah, I was going to say that's not a good. I think that's also very unlikely that's going to happen. So
that's why I think that it was. Why would the Phillies want to do with us right now?
Not going to happen. No.
He's been struggling too. It looks like. He has
1-2.
He's starting. Yeah, he's had some bad seasons here. Of course, those also coincide with the Phillies having like probably the historically worst defense. Like, probably the worst of all time.
Lying there.
Cigar pitchers' ERAs look bad this year. Imagine if you had Castellanos and Schwarber in the corner. Oh, my goodness. So
let's get to this last one. This is going to be really interesting, okay? We're going to start with what the Cardinals are giving up, and then we'll go from there. So it's going to be Dylan Carlson. Grisafo, Juan Yepes, and Tank Hentz. Right, so that's quite a bit of a haul.
I was gonna say this better be a big fucking name for giving up all that.
Never give up all that for half a.
Jesus Christ!
You have to resign him in the offseason.
And that, to me, OJ, what you said right there is the 100% notion that I would say no way, because if you can know going into it that you can guarantee to sign him for the long run, that's a no-brainer. But it's for the fact that you don't know what's going to happen at the end of the year. He may or may not sign with you, and you just gave up everything for a rental player.
Yeah, we don't want to do that. Sorry. I mean, as great as that would be to bring him here, but not at the chance if, you know, he losing walks to that. Yeah, because we literally gave up so much. You know, and our future too, as well.
Two of our best pitching prospects we've had.
Yeah,
time, and we're going to just throw them away for half of a year.
Yeah, no way. Especially for a year that they're realistically, we're probably not going to make it that far anyway. So it's like, for what? You know, we need to be planning for the future as well.
You are giving up way early.
Well, I'm just saying, dude, no, I'm being for real. Okay, so we bring in Ohtani. Do you think that immediately that just makes us a winning team? Obviously not. We have a lot of other things that are going on right now. I'm just saying. My point here I'm trying to make is, why give up the future for a possible shot, which the chances are pretty slim of us going that deep anyway this season. You know what I mean? That's kind of the point I'm trying to make.
I don't necessarily agree with that view. I mean, I do agree with not giving up the future for that, but I do think that Ohtani makes this team a serious World Series contender.
I'm with you, right? But OJ, to Adam's defense here, so I'm just going to put out some stuff here real quick. Last year, to win the Central Division and ironically to get the last spot in the playoffs, you need to get 87 wins, okay? So totally understand that, right? That was the last team to get in for the last wild card spot, and that was also to win the Central. Obviously, we got 93 wins, but that's where the Brewers were at 86 wins. We would need to go 77-59 to get to that point now. That's winning 57% of your games. Doesn't sound like a whole heck of a lot, but it is. Statistically, it's very improbable at this point that we'll be able to get to that. And that's based on last year, where, again, the Brewers fell apart. The Pirates may or may not fall apart. We don't know. And we don't know what the wild card is going to look like as well. We might need to get to 90 wins. We might need to get to 95 wins. We're not terribly too certain, obviously. So that's where Adam's going with this, too. But statistically, it's looking already very grim that we even get into the playoffs. I mean, it's just the reality of the situation.
I mean, like I said, 12 teams in, right?
Like I said earlier, the stat that I had pulled was the fact that there was only four other times in all of Major League Baseball history where a team has gone their first 25 games and won 10 or less games in that first 25 and actually gone on for a playoff spot. So I'm not saying it's impossible, but I'm saying it's very improbable. That's all.
Sure. I mean, I look at it as the roster is underperforming and seasons are made up of streaks, where you'll have some winning streaks and some streaks where you're doing better and you're doing worse. And the Cardinals are going through a bad streak right now, but they're also capable of going on 20-game win streaks, or, you know, not even that. I mean, you could take a stretch where you go like 18-4. Like, all of a sudden, you're right there, right? And that's really how a good team season looks, too. I mean, I don't know if all of them would have a stretch this bad, but they are going to have some stretches where they look pretty lousy. And then they're going to have stretches where they look unstoppable. And overall, the good balance is better than the bad. So we're just in the middle of a bad stretch right now. And until we see more of the season, I don't see any reason to assume otherwise.
And OJ, I'm telling you, I love your optimism. I really do. Like, you make me like more down to earth, where I don't get in my own head about this shit. Because the truth is, yes, statistically, again, it shows very improbable at this point, because we need to win 57% of our games, but it's just that, right? OJ, to your point, it's just 57%. It's not like we need to go 78% here and run the table and stuff like that. But it's just one of those things with them continuing to lose. It's just hard to see. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm more of a realist, I guess, instead of an optimist. Yeah. I guess that's my problem.
Yeah. So I'm very
I'm a realist / pessimistic more than I am optimistic, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
I look at the current situation. I'm like, not feeling good, not feeling it right now. But anyway, I hope I'm wrong, dude. I hope I'm wrong.
Speaking of not feeling good, let's transition on to the Battle Hawks. This is still a very sore subject. So for anybody that does not know, the St. Louis Battle Hawks lost out on their playoff because of the fifth tiebreaker, which was based on rankings. Adam, you and I have had several conversations about this, right?
It's so ridiculous, man. A winning team of 7-3. We missed the freaking playoffs, you know, where we have a losing team in freaking Arlington who's going to, I mean, it's just frustrating, I think, more than anything. And the fact that it went down, and the way that the rules are structured about the rankings instead of
it's not even because it's not even just rankings.
It's stupid.
It's ranking offense and defense.
It's so stupid, dude. I think it's so dumb. Like, and everyone was so confused about this whole thing. And no wonder. It was a clusterfuck from the very beginning. Literally, ESPN fucked up on the national broadcast of the Seattle Vegas game. It gave everybody like some glimmer of hope that was complete bullshit. Sorry, I'm getting a little emotional, but damn, dude, that it really pissed me off.
Yeah, no they need Seattle to lose, and that's all there was to it. Really.
Well, yeah, sure, but see,
and so this is, you know, OJ, this was the thing, right? Is what Adam and I had conversations, you know, outside the podcast when this happened, because obviously he and I are season ticket holders, so you know, we felt that we really got slighted in this. But the thing about it was, if they had knew everything going into it, if they just did point differential like every other effing team,
made it so much simpler.
Every league, we would have known that going into week 9 was a must win, and if we lost that, the chances of us getting in were almost zero. We would have known that. And so, okay, we lost. All right, well, we'll come for the last game and have a good time. But we know that, right? So we're not as butthurt about it. But we're really upset about it. It's just how everything went down. And again, Adam, you shipped me what was needed, right? What ESPN showed. And I remember sitting there watching that game, because there was a rush to get, you know, I was with my cousin, rush back to get to his house. We get it on the TV, and I'm like, oh my God, they intercepted the ball. We need Vegas to score. Like, okay, they don't score. Okay, and whatever, fine. Just run this clock out. And then all they did was just run the ball. And you're like,
yeah. And I'm like, what?
What? Yeah, and then it turns out that they didn't need the 34 points I was shown by ESPN. And here's my other thing about this too, Adam, and I'm going to go on a little bit of rant. I apologize to both of you guys.
Yeah, don't go for it, because I'm feeling it.
Right. This is what killed us this year. It's not even the fact that, you know, that Seattle won on a fifth tiebreaker and stuff like that. It's for the fact that the South absolutely killed us this season. What I mean by that is the fact that, yes, we beat every single team not named Seattle or DC, because we lost to DC twice, obviously. The biggest thing that comes into this was just how effing bad the South was. Again, Houston was the only good team at 7-3, which was our record, by the way. Oh, and by the way, too, we were above them in points for. We were not, we were, you know, 20 points behind them in points against, but regardless, like, we were right there with them, essentially. Arlington 4-6, San Antonio 3-7, Orlando 1-9, which is kind of crazy, right? The reason why we didn't make it in because of this stupid ass ranking system is because Arlington this year had 146 points for, 194 against. San Antonio 169 points for, 183 points against. To put that in reference, the worst team in the North was Vegas. They finished 2-8. Worst team, right? The only team that was below 500 in the North Division. They finished with 184 points for. That tells you right there that the South sucked miserably.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the only reason
why you have a losing record team going into the playoffs as well on top of it.
The only reason why Orlando got into or to the 200 for the points for as well is because we, in being in the Battle Dome in St. Louis for game 10, we put our reserves in for defense because we didn't care about the points against.
To score. That's what we were under the impression. Points. Yeah,
we were under the impression that we need to put up 50-something points against these guys, which, and by the way, we did set the record, and it didn't matter anyways because guess what? The points against did matter. So it's just it's crazy to me. They need to get to the point differential and just be done with it, right? 100%. I understand having the two divisions, and because you want to have 10 weeks, whatever. That makes sense. But with 8 teams, it's really freaking hard to sit there and say, okay, that Arlington, who had the worst points for them this season, gets into playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like we definitely got slided for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm going to, Adam, I'm going to give you the credit for this, but I'm going to read off this statistic here, right? So, Adam, you sent this to me on the phone. This was the average of the attendance, right? St. Louis Battlehawks this year had an attendance of 175,520. 175,520 in 5 games. San Antonio had the second highest. And by the way, San Antonio's like crowd, when we play them, they look pretty hyped. They look pretty good. I give it to San Antonio for showing up for their team, right? Oh yeah, that was 74,914 all season.
100,000 less.
We literally more than doubled them all year for average attendance. Our average attendance was 32,000 or 33,000, excuse me. Vegas Vipers all season long, 30,124.
Dude, we didn't even have a game of all five games in the dome. We didn't even have a game that was below that. And that was their entire season, bro. That's bad. Yeah. And we need these teams to succeed if we want the XFL to succeed for sure. So yeah, I'm not making fun of them. I'm saying this is not good for the team long term if they want us to make this for real. Like, they want to be serious about this shit. It's not good.
If you stack two of our home games at the average of 33,000, which would bring us to 66,000, we would, if just those two games, would have beaten more than half the league. The only teams that would have more tickets sold to us is DC at 71,000 and San Antonio again with 74,000. Mm-hmm. That's messed up, you know.
Yeah,
but it is what it is. Like, again, we're passionate, obviously, because, and Adam, listen, we obviously saw some decent games, we saw some bad games there, but the crowd was amazing, you know,
the whole time. Every single week that we were there, man, it was electric. You know, the whole place was wound up. I mean, yeah, granted, whenever shit wasn't going our way, you know, we were down about it, but we still, the whole game, damn near everybody was on their feet, you know.
Yeah.
So you know, we definitely are passionate for sure, and it's just kind of, it really sucks that, you know, we're going to miss out on, you know, this playoff, and it's going to ultimately, I think it's going to hurt the XFL and ratings as well, because I think that if St. Louis, I'm not saying that we should have got in because of ratings for sure. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying though, it's going to hurt the XFL. That is my point, because from a ratings perspective, I think they're going to have less people tune in because St. Louis is not in the playoffs for, and that's just my, you know, just saying, just for the overall success of the XFL. Like I said, I know that a number of tickets sold doesn't equate to like the sixth tiebreaker or whatever, as much as that'd be cool, but whatever. But nope. Anyway, it just sucks. I'm just saying, long term for the XFL, for this to be a successful product, we need people in the stands, and it's going to take more than St. Louis to carry this thing. You know what I mean? Long term, for sure. While they'll be back next year, I don't know how sustainable this product is going to be if we have, you know, teams that can't even, you know, they're getting 30,000 people for an entire season.
Jesus. For five games, yeah.
Yeah, for five games. That's not good. You know, when they're averaging like 6,000 people a freaking game at most. That ain't good. So I hope that they can figure that out. I mean, yeah, we're doing better than the USFL, but, you know, still.
Right.
USFL is obviously sucks, but, you know.
Not really a high bar.
I'm just saying, yeah, we want to be successful. Anyway.
OJ, what's your thoughts on, you know, obviously the Battlehawks not making the playoffs, or just really in general the season? Because I felt that we had a very good season. It's very bitter at the end of it because of obviously how it ended and us not making the playoffs. But I thought we had a very successful year. OJ, what's your thoughts on the Battlehawks so far or this year?
I definitely think it was a great year. And I hope that they have a chance to have another great year and build on their success from this year. Because honestly, I think XFL could be very successful, especially if once they get some continuity going, because then you actually have
programs
going, and the football will be a lot better, and it'll be more entertaining, more people want to watch it, because honestly, it should be higher skill level than college football, because you have people that have actually been drafted and stuff on, like, that's pretty much the entirety of every team, so, like, that's better than college football, because there's, you know, more higher percentage of them that actually played in the NFL. So to me, I think it was a very successful season. They need to figure out their playoff rules though. Cause like you guys said, it's just horse crap, and it sounds amateurish. Really. It sounds like something, you know, a WWE person would cook up. Like,
yeah.
They make it so convoluted that they can basically, shit up as they go, so they can put the teams they want in the playoffs. Well,
and honestly, that you heard a lot of that shit. It's like, this is fixed, this is bullshit, this is staged. You know, you literally heard a lot of that from a lot of people. It is like, well, you know, the way it's looking is all the confusion and shit. It certainly doesn't instill confidence, that's for sure.
Well, so, yeah, and you definitely, well, you know that that's why we're not in. They made the shit up as they're going along. to not put us in so that people would say, oh, well, if it was rigged, they'd have put St. Louis in. You know what I'm saying?
Dude, yeah, it was crazy. Like, you had no one was on the same page. Like, everybody at the Dome was, like, writing down these equations of this and that. Oh, it's got to be this way. No, it's got to be that way. Like, there's all these conspiracy theories about what it will take to actually make it. No one was on the same page. I mean, who knew, you know, at that point? But anyway.
There's two things that I got to say to this, and then we got to definitely move on.
Yeah.
But the two things to that one is, A, on the last week in week 10, I don't give a shit if you are trying to have every single game broadcasted on ESPN. There's a such thing called ESPN2. Oh, by the way, there's also ESPN3. I don't care. You need to have every single game played at the same effing time.
Yes, so that way, 100%. What happens is
the XFL goes and sends a memo to all the teams that are actually still have a playoff chance and say, this is what you need to happen in this game and the other game. So that way you're on the same page.
Yep.
So that way you don't have Seattle who can, we don't need to score this last touchdown with a minute and a half left, whatever. Or have Vegas put in their fucking reserves at halftime. And all of a sudden now they're not competitive at all against, you know, Seattle. I'm trying not to get so emotional about this and curse and stuff, but it just, it really irritates me. And again, I'll say one more thing, that the only reason why I don't believe things are rigged. I really don't. But it's interesting that in this league, you created it with 8 teams. 5 of those 8 teams have teams already in that city that belong to the NFL, right? Because Arlington is essentially Dallas, right? And that's where they play in Arlington.
Yeah, it is. Of course. Oh, that's, I mean, literally Arlington is where Cowboys play. So,
right, exactly. So you have 5. So that means 3 teams, San Antonio, Orlando, and St. Louis, don't have an NFL team. You're telling me all 3 of those teams missed the fucking playoffs, but 4 out of the 5 teams that do have an NFL team there make the playoffs?
Ah, that's the real reason. Try and get eyes on it in the bigger markets.
You see what I'm saying?
I'm going to say, how much does Stan Kroenke pay off The Rock here?
Yeah, dude.
Asshole. Is there a reason why the Rock never showed up in St. Louis? I bet there is. Anyway.
Well, that was scheduling issues, yes. Yeah.
He would and rather be at the freaking Oscars than in St. Louis, the one damn team that literally carried his fucking league. Anyway.
I will say something, though, Adam, to that. He was on something, some podcast or whatever, or for an XFL, and I think it was like week 3 or week 4. He did mention twice and not like, really talk, not really whatchamacallit, not like provoked or anything. He did mention twice how he very much regretted the fact that he could not be there in St. Louis.
Well, he showed up another game. There were 4 other games in St. Louis.
I know. Just saying. I really do.
St. Louis is going to give him shit until he shows up. All right. So
I believe he's going to show up next year.
You better show up. I'm challenging him right here on this very popular podcast. Show up next year.
We know he's listening.
I know you're listening. So show up.
All right, let's do this real quick because I am actually just really curious, and then we got to transition off this and we'll get to some of the playoffs and stuff like that. Let's keep this very short here. Adam, I'm going to start with you. What do the Battlehawks need to target going into this offseason's draft?
Well, I was going to say, it sounds like we're going to need a new quarterback from what it sounds like. So because it sounds like
McCarron's gone.
Yeah, it sounds like McCarron's gone. So that's going to be issue number one. Issue number two is as we've been seeing a lot lately too, is that our from a coaching perspective as well, dude, it's just all over the place. You know,
terrible.
Our coaching in general is just god awful. I mean, from
run the counter, man, run the counter
every fucking time. Damn time. And it's like, we've got to stop this stuff. You know, our OC is just, I don't know what he's thinking half the time. And then, you know, Coach Beck, he seemed like a nice guy and all, but I don't have faith in him. I'm not going to lie. I just don't have faith in him. So I don't think he'll be around next year. I already know there's no getting rid of him at this point, but we definitely need some better coaching in general for sure. And we have to stop with the same stupid mistakes time after time and just absolutely piss poor play call, you know, piss poor call, you know, play calling.
I got you.
Yes, thank you. And anyway, so that's one area. Well, go ahead. I think that's one area we definitely need to target as well. Just from what I've seen.
OJ, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I got the same impression as Adam, like, almost immediately when I started watching.
Yeah,
dude. I can't even really point to anything that I'm that mad about that he did. Like, I just don't think he, I guess I agree with you guys. He doesn't seem like he makes the best play calls.
Mm-mm.
I'm just, I don't know. But
it's the same stupid mistakes over and over and over. They do. It's so predictable. And that's part of the problem is that we are so predictable. That's why anybody that has even a little bit of a defensive line can stop us. You know what I mean? Because it's the same. Literally, Josh, how many times did you stand there and literally call off the play and you knew what it was going to be every damn time?
Yeah,
every damn time almost. It's like I said,
they had almost no time to prep. So like,
right.
For the season, I mean, and then they had to start playing games, so they don't exactly have a bunch of time to install new shirts. Sure. Probably decided to, you know, use the stuff that you know the best and hope that it works.
And just do the same thing and hope it works.
I guess. Well, but is it better to do that or do something that somebody's going to fuck up and run the wrong route? Do a pick, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, well, they did that too, so.
I say, honestly, give him another season. And we'll see. Let's see. Like if it still looks like this next year, then yes, we'll replace him. But I say give him a fair shake at it, give him a fair chance, and see how he can do.
I think we definitely, in the meantime, though, need to find a different OC. I'm just gonna put it out there. For sure. I'm not gonna lie. Our OC's trash. Sorry, I'm just gonna.
The only thing I'll add to that is I definitely think we need help on the defensive side and specifically defensive.
Sure.
Got to be able to get after the quarterback and be able to penetrate. I think our defensive tackles are good. They're just going to block up the lanes. But our edge pursuit and our edge containment needs to get better. I'm hoping that's what we can get.
Because every time they run an outside, you know, they're running outside route. It's like every time, and they can get right past us, no problem. Every time.
Right. Once you get to the outside containment, it was over. So
it was over. Game over. And you know, the fact is that at the beginning of the season, our D-line actually looked pretty decent, but probably a lot of that had to do with the fact that everybody saw and exploited the fact that we, you know, just had to throw it to the outside. That's all they had to do. So, and then that's whenever they're like, oh, hey, our D-line is not so great anymore. It's like, yeah, because, you know, they're just clogging up the middle. So.
All right, guys, let's try.
Stop being predictable. And, you know, that's what it all comes down to. Stop being predictable. So anyway.
Okay, let's go ahead and transition here to some of the playoffs. And these are just going to be more updates for the listeners and everything else. Sure. And just to kind of get our general take on everything. So let's start with the NHL here. So we talked about this last week, starting with the Avs in Seattle. I felt that, you know, Seattle was up 1-0 at the time. They're up 3-2 in that series. Mm-hmm. And Seattle actually might win this against the defending champs, which is pretty amazing, to be honest with you. So we'll see how that one.
What did I tell you?
No Nazem Kadri.
Yeah, what did I tell you?
Exactly.
Yep, can't run the goalie. Got no one to run the goalie for you now.
Damn right. Yeah. Damn right.
The second series out in the West is Dallas versus Minnesota. Dallas leads that one 3-2. Again, I was pulling for Minnesota, so that way we get a better draft pick with Dallas. But, you know, it is what it is.
Well, it's anything's possible either, you know.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's 3-2, and obviously the next game is going to be in Minnesota, so they could very well tie this up tomorrow.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
You know,
yeah. You're 100% right there. The third one we got here is Vegas versus Winnipeg. Vegas is leading that one quite handily right now, 3-1 in the series. They do play tonight. But it's in Vegas for game 5, so mm-hmm. we'll have to see how that goes. We got Edmonton versus the Lakers, or the Lakers. Wow. Man, I did this last week, too.
The Kings. Yeah.
Yep. And Edmonton finally leads 3-2, but it looked very grim for Edmonton there for a minute.
They sure did, didn't they? That was quite a game, wasn't it? So,
yeah.
That was quite a game. Man, that was wild. Yeah.
Looking at the East, we have Boston versus Florida. Boston leads that series 3-2. Toronto and Tampa Bay played today. Toronto led the series 3-1, but Tampa Bay was able to finish off 4-2 in Toronto to send game 6 back to Tampa Bay. see if the champ, the former champs, can continue to win there. Carolina Hurricanes versus the Islanders. The Canes lead that series 3-2. Let's go Canes, exactly. And my New Jersey Devils take on the Rangers, and that game just went final. And finally, the freaking Devils lead over the Rangers 3-2 in the series.
There we go, 3-2. Right. There we go. Let's go.
Oh, there we go. They dominated this game 4-0, so that's going to go to game six.
They're Rangers. Going back to the Rangers now, so for, I guess, Saturday. All right.
All right. So real quick, I'm going to start with you, OJ. Real quick, out of the teams that are still out there, has there been a team that's like popped out to you that says this is definitely going to be the Stanley Cup winner?
No, not really.
They've been great series so far, honestly. This has been very entertaining.
Yeah, there's a lot of close series.
Blues
for sure.
have not been yeah. in. Yeah, they've been very yeah. close games for the very most close. Part. Close series. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very physical, too. I like it. Very much so.
Yeah.
Been good. Adam, to same question that I just asked OJ, is there, you know, a specific team that points out to you that says, hey, this is definitely going to be the team that, you know, has a chance to win it all?
Toronto and Tampa Bay, too. So, hey, I was going to say, if Toronto, wouldn't that be wild? They actually can, you know, they're going to wipe out Tampa Bay. If they could go out there and actually, you know, keep them to one win, man, that would be quite something, wouldn't it? So,
yeah.
Oh, boy.
Like, actual... I've got nothing against Toronto or their fans, really, but for me, it's kind of the territory of like the Cubs curse at this point. Like, if
it is.
Yeah, you're right. They definitely have that.
It would just be, it's just
that's Canada, dude. That's Canada in general right
it's
now.
Good
so.
Copy, you know what I'm saying? Like,
that's Canada. Yeah. They can't win a damn cup to save their lives, so you know.
Let's keep it going.
Right, exactly.
We do
it's
have. To,
it's
we
one
do
of those things that you. Like, you feel bad for rooting against them, but at the same time, it's freaking funny that they keep losing. Oh, man, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't won a cup since, you know, since I was, like, how old, like, 8 years old or whatever, so, you know.
Damn.
Oh, wait, you're Toronto?
No, I'm talking about a Canadian team in general, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was like, dude, you weren't alive in 67. What the hell?
No,
are you talking?
I said Canadian team in general. No, I said no. Listen, I said Canadian team.
Yeah, I misheard you. Sorry.
Yeah.
I was like, damn, man, I tease you for being old, but not like that.
Yeah, no, I'm not that old, man. I'm not that old.
Like 60 years old.
I was gonna say, it sounds pretty good, I guess, for being 60 or whatever. I'm doing pretty good. Doing pretty good for myself. Yeah, no, can't complain.
Exactly, dude. Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
Man. Oh, geez.
See, that's what I'm saying. What made the Cubs one so special is that, you know, there's people that lived and died and never saw
Remember, we used to give them shit. The last time, the freaking Titanic sank, and there's people, everybody that was on board and have even survived are all dead now. And even that even happened after the last time they won a freaking World Series, you know? It's like, goddamn. Remember the list of, like, all the things that were invented since the Cubs last won a World Series? And it was, like, everything. You know, it was like everything we do in the end.
I'm pretty sure Red Dead Redemption 2 takes place in 1908. Like, I think it actually does. Like,
it's funny as hell.
Yeah. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
I tell you though, and I'm not gonna lie, I still look back on that series and says that there wasn't that delay for the light going out because Cleveland was on the rampage. They had that series.
Yeah.
And they just had all the momentum sucked out. If it wasn't for that, I'm telling you right now, Cleveland would have won that, and the GOAT curse would still be on. But, you know, it is.
Yeah.
Just like Baltimore in the Super Bowl that one year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, guys, let's get to – so on? I'm sorry, go on.
I think they had to send Ray Lewis out, right?
All right, let's transition here to the NBA Straw Hat Tournament here. So just an update, or really I'm just going to do a quick recap or whatever. Since I'm kind of the only guy that watches NBA, although I don't watch on
I have been watching a few games. I have been watching.
Yeah, and it's been – yeah, and this is kind of hard for me too. Like when the playoffs come, I always tend to watch more games than I don't. You know what I mean? But anyways.
Just because I have a little skin in the game now, so.
Yeah, exactly. So we all drew for six different teams. There was 18 total teams in it. And we've gotten quite a few eliminations now at this point in time. So the leaders right now with the most teams surviving is OJ and myself with four apiece. Cannot believe it because Adam, your Heat, yeah, the Miami Heat, they yep. beat my Bucks.
They did. They the number sure one, did.
That was
I watched that Bush, actually in OT.
Same there, here, yeah. man. Yeah, Butler, ice cold, dude. Freaking assassin. But anyways, biggest upset ever in NBA playoff history. Crazy. Did not know that, but that is pretty insane.
Really?
Adam, unreal. Yeah, so you're right behind us with three teams remaining. So the way this plays out right now, we know that in the Western Conference, the Nuggets did advance as they knocked out the Timberwolves. That is my team. They're going to be facing the Suns, who knocked out the Clippers, which is your team, Adam. So that matchup will happen. Still to be decided out in the West, though, is the Warriors versus the Kings. My Warriors are up 3-2 over OJ's Kings. Yep, one win away, and they're going back to the Bay, baby.
Yep.
Yep. Only one I really care about. And yep, the Grizzlies versus the Lakers. Lakers
got this, as much as I hate to say that.
But yeah, we'll see about that.
It, hey, it's good for me, at least in this, but yeah. It makes me cringe, but I am happy. In
I know, sense. I know. Yeah. So yeah, Grizzlies are OJ's team. Adam has the Lakers. And one. That game is played out tomorrow. No, they play tonight, I think, actually, for game six. Let me double check that. They play tomorrow.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think there's a game tonight, so. Yep. Yeah,
yeah, there is a game. Boston and
Atlanta. Gonna say one more, anyways, baby.
So we now then transition to the East. We know that the Miami Heat knocked out the Bucks, so they will play. That is Adam's team. And the Cavaliers got knocked out, which I think the Cavaliers weren't the Cavaliers. Let me actually just double check my notes because I have it all written down. I think the Cavaliers were OJ's team, or was that your team? Yeah, it was your team, Adam.
It was my team. Yeah, we got knocked out. I was going to say, the Knicks, obviously, you know.
Took care of business, baby.
Took care of business. I'm blanked. I'm damn near.
Now I'm facing you again in the next round as the Heat versus the Knicks.
Let's go. OJ's,
OJ 76ers are already through. They're waiting on the last team to finish up, which could happen tonight as the Celtics versus the Hawks. OJ Celtics versus my Atlanta Hawks. Right now, though. With 25 seconds left to go in the third, Atlanta just took the lead. They're up 100-98. So let's go Hawks. And that's man, that would be something for the Celtics. But yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see. But so far, OG, you actually had some really good teams that were chosen. I felt like this was a very, very I said it when we drew. I said it last week too, that this was a very even straw hat. So I'm very glad in how it's turned out. So.
Except for Adam, a bunch more than us. So.
Yeah, I ended up having to take on myself,
pretty much, yeah.
Twice, I think, yeah.
Yeah. No, so. just once.
Only once.
Yeah, because it was the Suns and Clippers, but yeah. And then the weird thing, so OJ, if the Celtics win tonight, then it's going to be your 76ers versus your Celtics. So, okay, cool. You're in the Eastern Conference Finals, but you're going to lose a team.
You know, but you're going to lose a team. Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Exactly.
Whereas at least, you know, with the Heat and the Knicks, at least, you know, Josh and I are facing each other. And so it'll be interesting, too, obviously, if the Lakers make it through and then Golden State. Ooh.
Yes, sir.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. For sure. Anyway. All right, guys. Well, let's go ahead and wrap this up. Adam, what is our social media question of the week?
We want to know from our listeners, what is your favorite sports venue in St. Louis and why? And I'm talking not just currently, I'm talking way back. We can go as far back as, you know, the Checker Dome. Yeah, I was going to say Sportsman Park. Absolutely. We could go back, you know, Checker Dome, you know, old school. You all are too young probably for that. I remember going there. It was cool. It was old school. I miss it. I still was so sad the day that it, you know, was imploded. God, it was so sad. But anyway, and then obviously even up to now, you know, the old Bush, you know, Bush Stadium 2, the current Bush, St. Louis City SC, you know, City Park, which is a really cool venue. I have yet to be there. You go there myself, but there's a lot of really cool venues now. But we'd love to be able to hear from our listeners, in all of St. Louis history, you know, what was your favorite venue and why? What was it about it? Was it the history? Was it the, you know, the amenities? Was it the views? What was it, you know, that was your favorite about it? So you can check us out on. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, so you can check us out on facebook.com/thehometownlosers. That's LOUSERS. Or twitter.com/hometownlosers. We'll have the question posted up there. And we'd love to hear from our listeners.
Great question, because I think we all like, I love the second Bush. You know, I like new Bush, but the second Bush where it looked like a beer bottle or a beer cup.
Yep.
You know what I'm talking about, like from the top.
And those old arches awesome. That literally like the fact that they brought in and incorporated so awesome. The arches. And for me, you know, I have a lot of history with that old stadium. And, you know, with being my very first baseball game and, you know, spent a lot of my childhood there, you know, the 98 season with McGuire and all that happening. You know, just there's a lot of history with that, you know, that just was a lot for me. But at the same time, you know, there's a lot of like about our current stadium. So there's, you know, there's pros and cons to everything, is it? So love to hear from our fans what their favorite was and why.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, because I think, again, at St. Louis, we definitely all have had experience for that, for sure.
For sure.
OJ, what is our game of the week? What is OJ's game of the week?
So our game of the week is the most important game of the week for the Cardinals, and that is the next game. Right now, so they just need to keep winning. So now they've won one. Tomorrow night, Jack Flaherty brings his 3.29 ERA to bear against Dustin May,
who has Dodgers.
ERA. So based off how the Cardinals have hit in the last inning and this game current of today, might be time to start going streaking ourselves. So let's the Dodgers. Let's go.
I was gonna say the Dodgers are only playing 500 ball, so you never know. So they haven't had the greatest start either. So
exactly.
They've been really struggling defensively too.
Yeah,
so that's a very good game of the week, because hopefully, as you said, your positivity can roll off on the Cardinals there, OJ. We can start getting some wins piled up. That'd be awesome
for sure.
It kind of feels like the worm's starting to turn, just based off of today and like the last inning of last game. Start to look like they're starting to believe. So let's go.
That's for sure. Well, guys, as always, you know, really appreciate your time. It's always super, super fun to do this stuff with you. But we will catch everybody here next week on the Hometown Losers podcast. We'll see you guys later.
See you.
Hey, this is Josh. Thanks for checking out and tuning in to the Hometown Losers podcast. Check us out next week as we continue our silliness and talk a little bit about the St. Louis sports scene. Catch you next week.